I was going to talk today about something, that rare topic for me to talk about, dealing with suffering. Or as somebody I remember being at the only time I did this, I was at a Buddhist Christian theology class. And everybody in it was, all the students were Christian, even though it was a Buddhist Christian theology class. They didn't have any Buddhist people and who were students in the class. And they were actually talking about how they have trouble dealing with suffering, like when people suffer. And I remember Venerable Hang Shor, who invited me to be at the class, said, "Oh, there's nothing Buddhists like to talk about more than suffering." Like, it's not a problem for us Buddhists.
Start branding.
This is sort of what we do, And I remember somebody very nicely saying, "You give a lot of talks on suffering, but they're pretty cheerful." And part of the thing about suffering is part of the human, the way we deal with suffering is often just to blind ourselves to the degree that we're uncomfortable, unhappy, that we're suffering really. People just take it for granted or just don't notice it, just push it away. It's even why people often work so hard to distract themselves, do other things. It's just to be unaware of how uncomfortable they are. Just like I remember watching something where somebody said, "God, the thing that would be the most horrible thing that could happen to me was be forced to be just somewhere and have nothing to do." For him, I remember even reading how Somerset Maugham, the writer, used to go on these long trips that are famous in his writing because he wrote about being in all these exotic places. But he said, could not imagine not having a book to read. Like, it was inconceivable. So he would take like this huge amount of books with him. So no matter where he was, he would have something to always read. The degree and a lot of training is, and the reasons we emphasize meditation, being mindful, and not just distracting ourselves, is so we can actually become sensitive to what's going on. Because unless we really notice the problem, we won't try for the solution. There's two sides of it. Usually people don't try for the solution because they don't believe they can solve it. There's a solution to suffering. This is the way, this is life. Life is hell. Life is difficult. Life is hard. But usually we don't see that there's a way out. And the usual human condition is to be deluded by greed, hate, and delusion. That's the whole, in a way, the whole transformation of training is actually becoming sensitive and becoming aware of our greed, aware of our ill will, and aware of our ignorance and delusion. Become aware, and we can actually see it how we generate, in a way, a fog of delusion that encompasses us. A fog, let's say, of somebody who's just lost an ambition. Like, the meaning of life is me getting ahead. Just like I'll be watching a show where everybody's battling to be like, take over the family company, a common theme. I saw reviews like of a Succession on now. And it's almost like, why do they care? They're all rich. I mean, why is it going to make them happy to have the company? I mean, they have all the money they would ever want, all these characters, but that's the nature of a lot of people is not to see what it is. A fog of ill will and hate. And you think, oh no, I don't have that. But all I have to do is think of how often people view people making who you don't agree with. You don't have any ill will towards people who are or seemingly making mistakes. And the delusion that you're not really seeing what is real. And we create fogs of worry. Just think of it. And actually, from the point of view of, I've talked to people who've been monks longer than me, and they'll almost talk about worry like it's happening to them. It's their karma, they worry, almost without seeing that worry is simply delusion, it's lack of acceptance. If you trust that it's okay, something goes wrong, you don't worry that much. The worry comes up as a functional thing, the same way fear or greed, desire comes up those are functional things to arise. If I'm hungry, it's not greed. The fact that I really want to eat something, or if I'm tired, I want to sleep, or I want things to go well. These are all normal functional desires, same way as if the Wi-Fi goes out, I won't be as happy as if it's on, because suddenly all these people, whatever it is, all the people online will be lost. We're just realizing I have to get a new computer because I just got a message. Some of my software won't work with my computer anymore. I've been putting this off, and I realized, God, I'm going to have to spend probably a day dealing, you know, on the type of thing that I don't like dealing with, which is getting a new computer and then finding out, okay, what problems have come up, because there'll be problems and all the rest. And it's nothing, just normal stuff. It's not the way I like to spend my time. And it's normal we have our preferences, but just to realize it doesn't matter and there's nothing to worry. You'll just deal with it. And, you know, worst comes to worst, usually it's just a matter of spending money and dealing. And I could even pay somebody to deal with it if it gets bad enough. You know, it's not like the end of the world.
Brother Master?
Yeah.
Sometimes worry almost seems like a virtue, like, which is kind of, obviously it's not, but it's easy sometimes to think about, if I didn't worry about my child or worry about my family, I must not love them as much. I think it's not uncommon.
No, but that's, again, delusion. You know what I mean? You're just making yourself suffer, thinking you're accomplishing something by worrying. Well, rather than just trusting that it's okay. The worry coming up, as I said, is fine. It's just, you have to realize you're not spending your time worrying. It's just basically just making yourself suffer for no reason. And it's not caring about something in the sense that you care. And when the thought of caring comes up, just like when you think of somebody, the worry comes up. Somebody I know wants to find out how bad their illness is. Naturally, when I think about them, the worry comes up. I hope they're okay, just like I heard of something about somebody who was just yesterday who was not doing that, having maybe some mental health issues. And when I think of them, I worry. But to sit there and keep worrying is not going to be helpful, and trusting that it'll be what it'll be. And in the end, there's nothing permanently going wrong. It's just what's happening. And sometimes somebody's going to have a hard time, and that's just the nature of things. And it's not, nothing is really going wrong. It's just the nature of things. Once we free up ourselves of attachment, of realizing the impermanence of it, it's not like it's a tragedy. It's just a shame that, you know, we don't want it any more than if I was just listening to somebody talking about how to deal with chronic pain. And it's just finding, and it's funny, they say, you know, the main thing to do is if you just change your attitude, that actually solves most of the problem. The problem is how you approach it, not in the pain. So, you know, we have to kind of, again, not see through deluded eyes, you know, what are we actually doing? Coming back to acceptance. If you don't want to accept something, sure, then we're always free to suffer. It happens very easily. That's the thing about suffering. It's really easy to suffer. All I have to do is just drive the car mindlessly and I can make myself suffer by bashing the car or doing something, you know, and I can create suffering quite easily by just being doing all sorts of things. Following my greed in a dumb direction. Just like somebody I remember just coming to me kind of bemoaning because they had just sat down and ate an entire box of cookies. And I thought, you know, the only problem is you're upset with yourself. It's a box of cookies. You know, you're now uncomfortable, but the only problem is you're now upset that you ate the box of cookies. It doesn't even matter that you ate the box of cookies. I mean, wow. you add up the calories, it's a pound. So what? How we view things makes a huge difference. Same way as, you know, the example I've given before, which is a doctor who treated people in an urban, rough emergency room. And he would comment how much pain people would be in. And then he treated soldiers on a battlefield and how, despite the dreadful injuries, often they weren't in that much pain because it was just a different attitude of mind towards what happens, you know, to the person in the urban area. Something has gone wrong when they're shot. Well, a soldier being shot is kind of like, this is part of the job. It's not like, I can't believe this happened to me. While the urban thing, it's like something went wrong. So it's the attitude of, and it's often hard to be still and simply see and accept the pain. So we push it away, just like we push away our discomfort. We push away how much we don't like something. Like a delusion that people will often have is, if I train, I'll like things. No, liking and has nothing to do with training. You know, the fact that I don't like some things, or wow, this person I find difficult, is just the nature of things. Just like, and we want the reverse. We want people we really like, without realizing you're going to have the reverse happen. And it's the trick is that to realize it doesn't matter, and you can still treat everyone well. And you don't have to care. And truthfully, then sometimes you'll, by treating somebody well, you'll realize, oh, actually, they're pretty nice. Get along with them. And often we wish for something magical to free us from suffering, from the disharmony, from the seeming meaninglessness so often we feel when we're suffering. Like, why is this happening? What's the purpose? And people often want to find meaning in what is happening, almost like an, they find it meaningless. Well, the meaning is how we approach it. Like one of the delusions people can have about what's happening to them is somehow this is being given to them sort of like as a teaching. The teaching comes from how we approach it. Reverend Master Jiyu in Japan had a teaching she was always giving herself. I have to take everything for my own good, to treat positively whatever was happening. But she wasn't thinking that people are trying to be good. You know what I mean? Her mistreatment wasn't people not mistreating her. It's just my training is to take it as a teaching. And if you want to realize, and just like if something awful happens to somebody, it's not like this is giving to them as teaching. It's just, this is the nature of karma. The meaning of it comes out not from what the karma is, but from how we relate to it. You know, so you can have a dreadful disease and just be overwhelmed, like, why is this happening to me? Or what's the meaning of it? Because people ask me, what's the meaning of me having cancer? It's like saying, what's the meaning of being hit by a car? What's the meaning of an earthquake? What's the meaning of, you know, the fact that it's raining? It's just, this is the way things are. This is the nature of karma. How we approach it, that's our training, to find the Buddha, whatever we're doing, to realize whatever we're doing is part of it. And when we're suffering, it's functional. It's telling us that we have to really look at what's going on. Same way as our difficulty with pain means we have to look at what's going on and see, how can I change my approach? In a way, learn that I don't have to have this reaction. And over time, you can learn it, because often, like, chronic pain is just something got caught in a loop. And in a way, we can actually help to end the loop, because really it's like a false signal going that, in a way, the mind is keeping going. Just like the way the mind will often stop doing things because of fear of pain. Just like in life, we can actually be shaped by fear. And the real fear is, you know, wow, this may make me, someone may hurt me. Something may, I may fail. This can happen. That can happen. And as long as we have that fear, it shapes us, same way as often physical therapy. What you need to do is learn to push through the pain and realize it's not a problem. you know, and actually it's not getting in the way, and you push through it and suddenly you realize, oh, things can get better. And a lot of training is pushing through the pain and realizing things can get better. And suffering is telling us we're doing something wrong, yet in most people's lives, they often keep making the same mistake. It's like when somebody tells me they've been married 4 or 5 times, I often think they probably didn't learn from the first one or two. You know, you kind of know, you know, it's like Elizabeth Taylor, you know, it's like married 8 or 9 times. It's like, you probably didn't look carefully. How did this go wrong? What were you doing wrong? Almost like when I've taught people how to use a computer, the interesting thing is they don't realize you can look at the screen and see all the keys that they've hit. And you can kind of see that they kept trying to do the same thing for 20 times without realizing it's not working. You know, you get kind of a readout on the screen that they're not trying to figure out what's going on, but they keep thinking this has to be, and we all do that to some extent. We've all done that on the computer, I bet. This has to work. Let me try it again. And after a while you learn, okay, I have to try something else. I have to approach this differently. The suffering is telling us, if we look at it as spiritual, that there's something going wrong. And we have to see an awareness of what's going wrong. And then we have to develop faith that there's something deeper we can find. And it would be nice if there was a nice way to make that real, but it's even why the Buddha himself didn't talk that much about nirvana. Didn't talk about what's the unconditioned. You know, it's like somebody I remember telling me that he's studying the unconditioned. I'm just thinking, you can't study the unconditioned. It's like saying, I'm going to understand the world without cause and effect. The mind can only understand causal things. Non-causal things mean we don't understand it. But being aware of the suffering can create a longing. And the Dharma is pointing you to something deeper that can resonate, the same way as it did for most of us here, is there was something in the Dharma and Buddhism and the teaching that made them realize there's something more to be found. And that's why we're listening to a Dharma talk, or that's why I'm talking. Because we want to find what's more real than just the fact that I'm feeling bad, or this isn't going my way, or I'm not getting what I want. Because that's actually seeing the world with deluded eyes. I'm seeing it through the prism of what I want and what I don't want. And then life is going to usually be unsatisfactory, because no matter who we are, we're free. We're so often getting what we don't want. Just like we're all going to get old age, disease, and death. And nobody's saying, that's what I want. I mean, it can have its positive side, but it's not like, wow. Like nowadays, you know, I'm now 70. And whenever I notice, every time I kind of take drive for any length of time, more than a few short drive, when I get out of the car, it's like, oh, I'm stiff. I didn't used to be stiff. You know, it's like, what happened? How come all these things, you know? And it's nice to have, you know, to have the better health, the better body, the better thing. And of course it is. Nobody wants the difficulty, physical problems and all the rest that old age inevitably brings. If you live long enough, you're going to have some, body's going to start wearing out. You know, just like I remember going for an arm problem and the doctor took x-rays finally. He thought, let me do an x-ray of your wrists. And he kind of looked at my wrists. He said, oh, they're both badly arthritic. And I go, oh, okay. Don't have a major problem with them yet, but that's probably what caused my arm problem. And I said, well, if they're not in pain now, I'll deal with them when they become a problem. But somewhere, if I live long enough, they're going to be a problem. And he said, one of them we have a solution to, and the other risk we don't. So, like, one, there's a way you can do something to correct the problem, and the other wrists you don't. And hopefully, maybe if I live long enough, they'll have great artificial wrists, something they don't have yet. But if we're still, by being still, we actually can become aware and sensitive to the pain and suffering, which is also why it's often difficult to be still, because we don't want to be sensitive. We don't want to be aware. And a good example of that is when I used to be in charge of, like, on a meditation retreat at the Abbey, and you'd have 30, 40 people meditating. It was, somebody was crying. You know, there'd be somebody in the hall crying, you know, on almost any retreat. You'll sit down and just start, you know, somebody's crying. And, you know, and that's a very normal thing, because in a way you're becoming sensitive to some suffering that you weren't. And I remember reading somebody saying, oh yeah, your first few years of serious practice, you know, you'll spend a lot of time crying because you're aware of the suffering. But there's something liberating about, just like it feels good actually when you suffer to be able to cry. In fact, people will be upset with themselves. Somebody dies and they couldn't cry. And often then they meditate sometimes, and 20 years later, they're crying for something that they actually was too painful for them to cry when they were younger, or when they were there. And that's actually very common. I mean, that's very common. Somebody dies and somebody can feel the grief just because they're, in a way, they're overwhelmed and they don't feel like, you know, they just don't, just like some people, somebody dies and they're just lost in the details of dealing with it. Because in a way that gives them a refuge or an escape from just feeling basically the loss. When we're not still and we're not present with what's going on with us, suffering then just confuses us, because it's just, we're getting what we don't want. And life is confusing. Just like I remember talking to someone who came by, and he mentioned that his life keeps crashing to a part because he keeps using hard drugs regularly and then crashes out for a period of time and usually finds a way to stop. And luckily, he's good enough at his job that they just accept him back. And, you know, he keeps doing this. And he goes, I remember him going to me and saying, life is completely confusing. It doesn't make any sense to me. Does it make any sense to you? And of course it makes, his situation is very straightforward. You know, there's nothing particularly confusing about somebody using drugs, but of course what he's confusing to him is he doesn't understand why he can't stop it. But actually, if you look carefully, you can find out it's not that confusing. The same way somebody says, I don't understand why I ate that. It's not that confusing. It's not like, wow, you need a mystical insight why you ate too much pizza. Or you ate the box of cookies, or did that, or didn't do what you needed to do, or why you know, almost like where somebody was saying, just not taking care of themselves. I don't know why I'm that way. And it's like, it's not that confusing if you really just look at it. You can see where the choices are being made. Yeah, Mary?
I used to say, understanding is the booby prize. Some of those, that was praised somewhere along the way, I heard. And I guess my question has always been, how is it ever, I mean, just because you see that it's used in the drugs, it makes it doesn't, what do you do next if it's such a habitual habit? I guess that's, I mean, then we, I mean, what do we say to somebody who isn't a meditator? That we should, it's, what if, where, it's the actions that we take from the drugs, right, River Master, that get us into the next bit of trouble instead of just stopping them. I'm just using drugs as hypothetical. But if we could just stop, we would stop. But we can't. And then that becomes the next hard place. And I guess I'm just, I mean, I know from my own life how I've dealt with it and has noise. But what do we, how do we think about that? I guess, how important is it to have right, is that right view? Am I making reference?
Right view of.
Right view of any problem, any suffering.
Well, the suffering is to see what's going on and understand, you know, compassion and acceptance and just see. But the point of the person, when you're making a mistake, is to see, to understand how you make the mistake, where the choices were made. For instance, usually the person like this case, or the person, he has to see how he keeps thought mess, you know, where, how he starts again. It's a choice, you know, and you can see, it's almost the same way as I realize in some things I have to see where I make the choice and see how I can change my behavior. The same way as if you lose your temper with somebody, how do you learn? You have to see what, understand better how you made that choice and work at making a better choice. And then sometimes realizing you're going to fall down and get up, the same way as the classic one with, let's say, an alcoholic, where they'll stop drinking and do that expression, I don't understand, fall off the wagon. Why is it fall off the wagon? I don't know, but fall off the wagon. Like, I guess that has all the alcohol on it. And that's part of the training, the same way as, you know, somebody who's on a diet will crash out and blow it, and they, hopefully they can understand better why they did it and learn and, you know, take steps not to do what it needs not to make that mistake. The same way as, let's say, talking about worry, you have to see what causes you to worry and how you can stop it and take responsibility for your choices. And training is seeing that it's not happening to us. Unless you see your choices, of course you can't change. If somebody just tells me, well, I'm a worrier, like somebody I remember greatly annoying me, a monk who kind of says, well, Kinra, you're not somebody who worries a lot, almost like this is kind of like my karma that I don't worry. When I think, well, like work, you know what I mean? It's like, you naturally, we all have some karmic tendencies, and I probably do have better karmic tendencies in that area than some people. But on the other hand, when it comes up, I have to work at it. It's not like nothing ever comes up that I don't worry about. I don't see myself worrying. I don't see myself complaining or criticizing or being greedy, selfish. You know, all this stuff comes up, and it's what do you, how do you make your choices when they come up? And unless you can see where you can choose to be different, of course, then you're lost. You can't, it's happening to you. And it's almost like I was talking the other day where it's almost like somebody coming up to me, I remember telling me, well, I didn't want to sleep with that person. I'm kind of going like, it's not like there wasn't a choice there. You know, it's not like it happened to you that you did it. It's understandable you had trouble resisting, and that's not unusual karma, you know, the fact that, wow, that happened. Or, but on the other hand, if you look, you made a choice. Just like I remember somebody describing, he was a monk in our sangha, and he went to meet somebody who was a lay sangha member, and in a way she clearly seduced him. But then when I heard it, I thought the whole thing, he actually knew she was interested in him. He put himself in that position because it was kind of, it would have been clear that, oh, that's what, that could happen. And he put himself in a position that it could happen. And I thought, yes, it would have been nice if she wasn't, she literally didn't try to get him to have sex with her. But on the other hand, it was his karma. He should have realized, okay, you know, you better watch yourself around this person because you're attracted to her and she's clearly attracted to you. And if you don't take steps, it's very easy to make a mistake. And that's a choice. And you would have been aware. We've all been in when I'm talking about this, we all know what I'm talking about. Anyone who's had relationships knows, oh, where you put me, where you're making your choices. So you have to see the choices. And sometimes what you're saying is it's going to be hard or you can't maintain it. But like worry, there's no way to, okay, tomorrow I'm not going to worry. Like when it comes up, you can let go of it. And you can say, but it keeps coming up. Duh. You keep letting go. It's like somebody complaining to me. I remember somebody recently was saying, I don't know if I'm meditating. And then they just talking a little about their meditation. I'm saying, it's not like you can't meditate. You're just lazy. You're not making much effort. So you don't feel like you're, when you sit down, you're doing anything. Can be hard. You have to keep bringing your mind back. It's not like, wow, it's going to do it all on its own if I just sit there. You have to, when the mind wanders, and if you don't make any effort, like, yeah, in a way, you're not meditating much. You have to make some effort. It's not a giant effort. It's a gentle effort. Mind wanders, bring it back. Mind wanders, bring it back. Nothing mystical. Anybody can do it. There's not a single person who can't do that. It's
really hard.
It's hard, but on the other hand, it's doable. And, you know, and it's understandable. If it's really hard, you won't, you know, some people it's not as hard. We're not all the same. I'll talk to people who meditation isn't this difficulty for the as much, but it's still hard. You know, the same reason why I talk about the fact that nobody ever tells me that they I had nothing to do today, so I just meditated for 4 hours. Instead of watching a movie, I just decided, oh, it probably benefit me more to meditate. Now, if I ask all of you, next time you're watching a movie, what would benefit you more, watching the movie or meditating? I think most of you would say probably would benefit me more to meditate for 2 hours. But the reason you don't do it is it takes a fair amount of effort to meditate. You know, and there's a reason why nobody ever tells me they do that, because it does take effort. The same reason why people come together to do meditation, because it makes it a bit easier to do it in a group. Same reason I'm usually don't expect huge attendance at our retreats on Zoom, because actually it'd be hard. I would find it hard to do the Zoom to meditate. You know, it helps to be with everyone else to do it. It's like makes me... I'm not going to get restless after 15 minutes and think, I could really use some coffee right now. And it's important to see what it is that's going on. You know, if the defilements come up, we have to see them as defilements, like anger, greed, ignorance, where we think that this doesn't have meaning. There's no significance in what I'm doing. It's just seeing that in a way the grasping is provisional. I can't really hold on to something because that's delusional. It's why we make something important when it's not, because we think we can hold on. It's even why we worry rather than realizing it's all going to wash away. So it's not like it's a tragedy, even when on a practical level, it sounds like a tragedy. Somebody commits suicide. It's very sad. But from a Buddhist point of view, it's not a tragedy in the real sense, because it's not going on the same way as a monk in the Sangha wrote a nice article. In fact, when he experienced his past lives, he had committed suicide a number of times. And now in this life, he has to resist that desire to commit suicide. And plus he got the karma of having two immediate family members commit suicide. So suddenly he's getting the other side of like what it does, because often people don't realize what they're doing when they commit suicide. And part of the suffering, the teaching of suffering, is looking to see that we're having a problem with it. And in a way, we need help. And one of the delusions that we can have is that I don't need help. I'm talking about like somebody I remember telling me, you know, being surprised. I mean, I'm deluded. Shocking. You have delusion. But we're all, in a way, if we have a problem with a lot of these things and we're suffering, in a way, we're deluded. It's like the line, the title of the commentary on the scripture of great wisdom, the Heart Sutra, is by Sheng Yin, is there is no suffering, you know, which is part of the teaching of the Heart Sutra. Form is empty. the suffering's coming from just our deluded way of looking at it. Asking for help in a way, seeing that we need help, because actually, if we think we actually always know what to do, okay, why is that? If I'm deluded about this, why do I think I necessarily know how to solve my delusion? I'm deluded, but I know how to deal with delusion. Obviously, if you knew how to deal with delusion, you wouldn't be deluded. The very fact that you're not seeing things and they're suffering means actually you could use help. And in a way, asking for help is very positive. It means you're looking and you're not assuming you know what to do. Because often people knowing what to do is almost like the person on the computer hitting the same key repeatedly. Oh, this is a solution. I just like somebody, you know, who are having some problem and they don't, it hasn't been working. But if I keep doing the same thing, it will work. And often when somebody talk or not seeing it, it's almost like the way I've sometimes talked to somebody who's been practicing for a, like an example I've often used is someone who became a monk. And this has happened a number of times where they become, spend a few, usually a number of a few years at least trying to become a monk. And they either become a postulant or a monk. And then they tell me, and this has happened repeatedly, like, God, everything became so hard and fell apart or difficult. And in a way, they didn't really listen or take refuge and ask for the help and realize this is all what's supposed to happen. Nothing's going wrong. There's no problem here. It's just you're recognizing you're a mess and that a lot needs to change. And to recognize that is hard. We mostly had a feeling like, just like I've talked to people, they felt like, oh, I can do this. And I thought, if they practice for a while, they're going to kind of recognize in a way they can't do this because we don't actually know how to let go of things. We don't actually know how to stop being deluded. And actually, it's helpful to recognize that. It's why the altar down, this classic Zen altar is the one we have downstairs, and it's the Sumeru altar. And the symbolism of it is the first, it has steps kind of going up inward. That's how you begin training. It seems straightforward. Somebody will tell me, oh, you mean I just have to keep the precepts and let things go? I can do that. I mean, people will say that to me. And I think, okay, that's going up those steps. And they'll often be enthused. This is great teaching. This is wonderful. You're wonderful. Everything's wonderful. And then they kind of get in. Then the altar goes straight up. Okay. It's hard to take those steps. It's harder than the steps. But maybe I can go straight up the spiritual mountain. And then it goes, the steps go the other way. And actually, how do I climb steps going where gravity will just pull, you know? There's no way to do it. And that's why, in a way, we don't know how to do that. And actually, it's like when somebody to ask me, how do I let something go? You don't know how to let go. In the sense, it's not up to you. It's not within your power to let things go. In the sense that, when's this going to give you, wow, somebody hurt my feelings. When's it going to be okay? It's actually completely not up to you. It'll happen when it happens. And we have to trust the path and trust the teaching and trust that in a way we don't understand, but somehow this has been working for 2,500 years. And actually, and people can actually help me figure out how to walk up, you know, climb Mount Sumeru, because they've been, people have been doing it all along. And often it means you have to ask for help to see how, and realize I'm looking at it the wrong way. Just like when we're talking before about pain, the solution to pain is often realizing we have to look at it differently and approach it in a different way, and then actually solvable. But if you look at it the wrong way, you know, just like I was, again, listening to somebody talking about being in chronic pain. And he was just saying how it narrowed his whole world and everything was the pain. And he had to learn just to see that it's not, it's just there. And it's not, he doesn't have to kind of concentrate on it, be aware of it, tune into it all the time. You're aware of it the same way as you can be aware of it comes up and you think, oh, I hate this, and get on with things. You know, the same ways we can feel bad and realize it's not a big deal. And a lot of the ways we, when we're willing to face for suffering and we ask for help, we have to trust that the help is there and that the teaching and Dharma is there. And that when we take things for granted, we actually don't ask for help. When we just think, oh, I can do this. We often aren't seeing the ways that we're actually going the wrong way. And often it's almost like you're on a path and you don't want to find out, oh, is this the right path? No, I know what to do. Well, to be open means you're willing to actually recognize you actually don't know that much. It's like St. John of the Cross, who had it, whole spiritual life is to want nothing, have nothing, know nothing. And then you, which means you're just open to what seems right. And you're not, and you're open to actually change directions. Because you're not being committed. This is what it's like. Oh, this isn't working. This doesn't seem right. Let me try to turn. And in a way, we're trusting the unfolding of our karma and all the karma in the world, because that's the path. That nothing is going to be lost, even with the good and bad karma. It's just the nature of karma. Just like no matter what happens, our reality is going to be filled of disease, death, all these problems. It's not like that's nothing going wrong anymore than it's something's going wrong, that if you're a rabbit, that things hunt you. You know, that's the nature of being a rabbit. It's not like predators are bad or good. It's just the nature of things. It's just death doing it. Anyway,